I thought the beginning of John, the Gospel of John, would be a good place to start for a new year and a new decade. And so we read from, it's from a version called the Inclusive Bible. We read what is familiar to many from the Gospel of John. In the beginning, there was the Word. The Word was in God's presence, and the Word was God. The Word was present to God from the beginning. Through the Word, all things came into being, and apart from the Word, nothing came into being that has come into being. And the Word was life, and that life was humanity's light, a light that shines in the darkness, a light that the darkness has never overtaken. Then came one named John, sent as an envoy from God, who came as a witness to testify about the light, so that through his testimony everyone might believe. He himself wasn't the light. He only came to testify about the light, the true light that illumines all humankind. The Word was coming into the world, as in the world, and though the world was made through the Word didn't recognize it. Though the Word came to its own realm, the Word's own people didn't accept it. Yet any who did accept the Word, who believed in that name, were empowered to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor urge of flesh, nor human will, but born of God. And the Word became flesh and stayed for a while among us. We saw the Word's glory, the favor and position a parent gives an only child, filled with grace, filled with truth. A word from our Holy Scripture. Thanks be to God. In the beginning. What a great way to start a new year, a new decade. In the beginning. It grips the imagination and conjures up all kinds of possibilities. Like, you know, when you're a kid and a story starts with, once upon a time, and you know that what's about to unfold is a story filled of awe and wonder and adventure. In the beginning. This is how John starts out his gospel and his version of how Jesus arrives in the world. It's not the story of Mary and Joseph and shepherds and wise men and light, but make no mistake, the writer of the Gospel of John wants to tell you how Jesus came into the world. And this is his version, put in a grand poem. In the beginning was the Word. Nothing but the Word. Pregnant pause. And then everything burst into being. Nothing that exists, he said, exists without the Word. The Word was with God, the Word was God, and through the Word, everything exists. The universe, stars, planets, suns, black holes, wormholes, northern lights, mountains and rivers and oceans and trees and every living thing, including you and me. Everything bursts into being through the Word. And here we are. And then, the most amazing thing, John says, is that the Word became flesh and came to live among us. And in that Word was life. And that life was humanity's light, a light that shines in the darkness, a light that the darkness can never overtake, it says. And that light was Jesus. And through Jesus, all things come into being. Tomorrow is January 6th, which is Epiphany for some, that sort of wraps up the 12 days of Christmas. For our Orthodox brothers and sisters, it is Christmas Day for them. And Epiphany is a celebration of light, of the light coming into the world, illuminating the darkness. And that light, John proclaims, is Christ himself. But even more miraculous than that, he goes on further to proclaim that those who recognize Christ as the light, who accept that he is light, that they too are light. That those who recognize Christ are children of God. We are God's children. Not that those who don't recognize Christ as the light aren't children of God too. It's just that when we recognize Christ and who he is, we find that light reflected in ourselves, and we strive then to be that kind of light in the world. This week I was doing a little research on light. I think I'd forgotten my science lessons from many moons ago. Because I'm sure many of you know this, but that light, pure white light, which a few are experiencing over here today, is not the absence of color. In fact, what is contained within white light is all colors. All colors. And when white light, that pure white light, is refracted through a medium like water or glass, that medium itself separates the white light into its constituent parts and waves, and we see separate colors. What we see, in fact, is a rainbow. Colors. Now, I brought a prism. And I thought I could hold it up to the light. I tried this at DeWinton. It didn't work, because it doesn't work with just candles or light. It has to be sunlight. The sunlight has to shine through, and then the prism will make little colors all over, so I don't think it'll work unless I got down there. Now, I couldn't find my prism, so it's a little cat prism that I had sitting up there, and somebody said to me afterwards, it didn't work because it's a cat. And it never does what you want it to do. But if I could get to pure light, this would shine little rainbows all over the sanctuary, because it will take the pure white light and refract it into colors. And I started thinking this week that if Christ is that pure light, then we, as Christ's children, are the medium through which Christ shines and spreads color throughout the world. So imagine Christ as the pure light that comes into the world, and we are the refractors that separates that light into the colors in the world. We are here to color the world. This month, as I said, our theme is who we are in Christ. And I think that this passage at the beginning of John is a good place to start. Not just because it's the start of a new year or a new decade, but it's because it's a good place to start for those of us who follow Christ. For it states in no uncertain terms that we are children of God, that we are children of the light. And that Christ's light will be refracted and reflected through us into the world. And I think we can admit that if the world needs anything these days, it is illumination. We need to remind people that even when things appear hopeless or dark, that there are better things ahead. And I know it's not very easy to say that these days. This past week, I had lunch with a few of my clergy friends. And because it was the 2nd of January, a new year, new decade, we at some point turned to speculating on what we thought the next decade might bring. And I confess that our musings were not all that optimistic, given what is going on right now and how we think things might unfold in the future. We basically agreed that it was likely that in the next 10 years, we would still be in for years of disruption and destabilization as we try to sort out where we are, where we need to go, and how to get there. Yet, in that little group of people, what gave us hope was each other. Was other people who are following Christ and seeking to be light in the world. That being in community is hopeful. Building relationships and supporting each other give us strength and hope. We all realized as we were talking that for the most part, also, we had all stopped listening to the news. Agreeing that if we really need to know something, somebody's going to say it. We're going to hear about it some way. But it had become difficult to keep listening to what is going on in the world and to feel so hopeless when we can't do anything about it and had no control over it. The news does not provide hope. What we did agree on was that knowing what's going on in the world, often, if not always, distracts us from what's going on in our neighborhoods and communities. And that if we're going to make any significant difference in the world, we first have to make a difference right where we are. That's not saying that we don't do things elsewhere. Just that we have a responsibility to our neighbors and to those we know and love before others. And sometimes that's what makes it difficult. Yet this is exactly what Jesus did. His impact on the world wasn't from creating a global institution, no matter what it is turned into. He built relationships with a small group of people and transformed their lives. And he addressed the needs of the people who were within his vicinity, who presented themselves right in the moment. He didn't go looking for people. They came to him and he met their needs right now. And from the relationships he built, the movement spread out from this small group of people who had been so transformed by his ministry of teaching, healing, and feeding that they went out and shared it with others, one relationship at a time. Christianity itself is a relational movement, not an institution. At least that's how it started. And maybe that's what we need to return to. If we're to be light in the world, we will do it where it can have the most impact on people, where we can personally, one-to-one, care for another in such a way that their lives are changed and then they go on to touch other people. I've been thinking about this lately as I ponder how our communities can become better for everyone. And if everyone just looked out for their neighbors, literally, their neighbors on either side of them, and their neighbors looked after the people on their at the side of them, and that we fostered strong relationships with our neighbors, we'd have stronger, healthier communities. In early December, I attended a social summit in Sherwood Park, the theme of which was isolation to connection. And there were a number of fantastic speakers there, and I took a lot of notes that I still have to go through. But I wanted to share a few things with you that stood out for me that day. Professor Timothy Caulfield spoke about social connections as the key to well-being. Social connections are the key to well-being. He noted that as relationships fray, people's well-being start to decline. In the past, he said, our social capital is far stronger. And when things get tough, the community used to gather around and support the people or families that were going through difficulties. And those who didn't have that kind of support didn't fare as well. Today, these connections are fraying, and we are encountering more and more isolation in our communities, which is leading to significant anxiety, fear, and diminished well-being, both personally and for our communities. Loneliness is becoming a major problem in our society, and it is leading to serious health concerns. And he notes that millennials are the loneliest generation, even though they're most connected through technology. What we need to do, he said, is get away from the distracting noise all around us and get back to concentrating on connections in our lives, real connection. The noise he speaks of is all that hooey that pop culture is feeding us. The wellness industry itself is based on fear. They tell us we're not healthy until we do this, and so we buy it. We soak it up. We simply need more healthy human connection. Another speaker who's working with the Alberta government, Dr. Richard Lewandzuk, shared some really staggering statistics about our healthcare system. In 2018-2019, over 40% of Alberta's provincial budget was spent on healthcare. And it's going up. And it's not sustainable. But even more staggering was the statistic that 1% of our population takes up 50 to 60% of our healthcare budget. 1% of the population takes up 50 to 60% of the healthcare budget. Anybody want to take a guess at who that 1% are? Seniors. Not just any seniors, frail, isolated seniors. Those without a lot of support. Doctors, he said, are not able to predict who will end up in the hospital the next year due to a health condition. Doctors can't determine that, even though somebody might be quite ill. They can't say who might end up in the hospital in the next year. But there are people who can predict much better who will end up in the hospital. Surprise me, the people who deliver Meals on Wheels or home services. And why can they predict better? Because they're going into the home and they're seeing who's lonely and isolated and alone. The single strongest predictor of who's going to end up in hospital in the next year, he said, is loneliness. The single biggest predictor of who will go into the hospital is loneliness. Loneliness is deadly. This past week, I had two occasions to see the effects of human isolation. I received a call late in the day on Friday from a local social worker who asked if I could help with someone who is in desperate need of housing until they could find a more permanent solution this coming week. Fortunately, with your generosity and your help, through the Benevolent Fund, we were able to put them up in a hotel for the weekend until they could get some help starting on Monday morning. The other one was right in my own family and an example of somebody who is isolated and unable to care for themselves and probably spent more time in the hospital than they needed to. Invariably, the people who require assistance from the Benevolent Fund come here because they have exhausted either their support systems or more often they have no support system. As children of God and as reflections of God's light, we will be about the work of building relationships, of caring for people, of transforming lives. Big systems can't and won't do this. More often than not, they diminish lives. We need to go smaller, care deeper for the people around us. The church, we, can create space for people to connect and to support each other. We will be the medium through which Christ's light can be reflected, so that our community and world will experience the brilliant color of Christ. In the beginning. Let's start now. Let's start today. To be light, true children of God, and let Christ shine through us. We're going to take a few moments now to